Hej och välkommen till ännu ett avsnitt av Musikbranschpodden. Jag heter Andreas Andersson och här träffar jag spännande gäster som delar med sig av kunskap och inspiration. Podden produceras av DMG Education som är musikbranschens digitala kunskapsarena med utbildningar, kurser och coachning för dig som vill utveckla din karriär. I dagens avsnitt som är helt på engelska träffar jag Eddie Matthew som är grundare av Lily Ray Music som jobbar med management och förlagsverksamhet. Hör om hans resa från USA till att idag driva bolag i nära samarbete med Warner Chappell. Om att arbeta med kreatörer och framförallt producenter och vad han letar efter hos en producent. Om relationsbyggande, långsiktighet, att hålla sig uppdaterad om branschen och mycket, mycket mer. Vi kör igång!
We're good to go.
All right, we're good.
Ready? I'm ready when you are.
Yeah, we're sitting in your studio right now. Are you calling this your studio?
I'd say it's Lily Ray Studio mesh with. So, you know, we do a lot of partnerships. I would say, yeah, it's Lily Ray Studio, but Lily Ray has a lot of partnerships. I guess we'll go into.
Yeah, we're gonna go into Lily Ray and.
Yeah, you know, all my writers sit here, so we're not sharing this with anybody. So it's inside of MFG, but it's our own like private complex.
Yeah.
So like it's only people who I'm in business with some way, shape, or form, whether it's publishing or management or both. So it's really just our writers and our team, and it feels like a safe place for us to be creative and come up with great ideas.
Yeah, we're gonna dig deeper into like Lil Ray and. The work behind and stuff like that. So, but you work with the publishing or and management?
Yeah. Yes.
Mainly.
Yeah. You know, music has a lot of branches.
Yeah.
But I would say the main branch at the moment, I say publishing has become the driver, but I think it started with management. I didn't always have a publishing company. Lily Ray started as a management company and kind of morphed into publishing.
Oh, right.
Yeah. When I first got to Sweden, I was just managing.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, I guess it's starting to become a thing. But when I got here, everybody was publishers and there wasn't that many managers. That was a shock to me because kind of like the opposite way in America where there's a lot of managers. Not everybody can call themselves a publisher.
Right.
So when I got here, you know, I met so many different publishers, independent publishers, major publishers, not as many managers. And then, you know, I started out in management and kind of built a partnership with Warner Chappell and started a publishing company.
Awesome. But how often do you sit right here in the studio or how often do you work from here with the writers and listen to music?
This studio we're sitting in now is occupied by a writer that we publish. When I say writer, I usually, that could fall from producer to writer. We can get deeper into that. But if I just say writer, it's producer or writer. The producer who sits here is Stray Nane, and we publish Stray. Stray, I would say, is a dominant force in urban music, urban culture in Sweden. He's had a lot of success here, and he spends most of his time in this room. Since he is a busy guy, we spend a lot of time in it as well. We have meetings here. So I like to say I'm here. I try to get in here at least three, four times a week. You know what I mean? Some weeks I'd rather be in here than the office. We have an office inside a chapel. So, you know, it's really, really close, like two blocks away.
Yeah. So how much time do you spend on the business side and how much time do you spend on like the creative side? Feedback. Oof. And yeah.
That feedback conversation is a really tricky conversation. I think we talked about that off camera. You know, I would say I'm not the best when it comes to feedback. You know, I'd say that feedback thing is scary. I don't know if it's something that happened to me early in my career or if it's just something maybe I came across, somebody said something really wise to me. And I just feel like, you know, on the business side, we're kind of like the vessel, right? Just like you make this great piece of art, we're going to try to find a home for it, you know? But you created this art, so I feel like by the time we got it, you kind of already sculpted into where you feel like it's going to be. And I don't know if my feedback helps that, you know, because if I say, you know, the snare should be a little lower or maybe you should have a different pre-chorus or whatever the case may be. If you stumble across one of your heroes, let's say it's Max Martin or Shellback or, I don't know, Pharrell. If you play that song and they say this is perfect the way it is, you'll never take my advice again. So I really try to stay out of that creative process. I started out being creative because I started out as a DJ. So I have a sense of understanding a music catalog and library and a lot of different genres. But I'd say I try to stay out of the feedback conversation. I think gets a little tricky.
Mm.
Yeah. If it's ready to go and you feel confident it's ready to go, I'm going to try my best to find a home for it.
So you're more into like the business side of the music industry.
Yeah, I love it. I love seeing a young songwriter, producer, just building and going through the process and just starting their marathon journey. This thing is a marathon. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it might feel like it. You might have a moment, but then you got to carry that moment, and that's where the marathon goes.
Mm.
You know, that's kind of you. Maybe you had a chance to sprint for the first 3-4 miles of it, but eventually you're going to have to pace yourself because this thing is a marathon. So I feel like overall, I try to stay on the business.
Mm.
I feel like that's the best place for me to be.
Great. Well, probably get down to that as well. But can you share with us like the story behind Little Ray Music and then how it came to life?
Yeah. Well, I'd say Little Ray Music came to life when, another important person in my life came to life. That my daughter, you know, it's named after my daughter, Lily Ray. She has a hyphen name. The Ray is spelled R-A-Y-E, like the big artist who won a bunch of Brits. That we were blessed to be a part of that project. Just side note, might as well plug that in there. R-A-Y-E, it's spelled that way, but she's named after a good friend of mine. His name's Al Ray. He passed away when I was a kid. He was murdered in a grocery store. It was a real trauma for me, you know what I mean? But he was probably the closest person to me. So naturally, my first, you know, my first baby girl had the name of Ray.
Mm.
So it started that way. Came over. Met my wife in New York. I was living in LA at the time, and then she got pregnant, and she was telling me all the great things about Sweden and how it was to raise kids. Didn't know if I wanted to raise a kid in LA in a 2-bedroom right off of Sunset. Just felt like that environment might not be the vibe. So tried it, and then I met some great producers and writers when I got here, and just tried to kind of bridge a gap. What I was doing in America, I was managing and working with artists and working with producers, and I just felt like, hey, maybe I could bridge the gap, bring some Swedish talent to start working internationally. And then I met a great group of writers and producers that I still work with to this day, and that's how Lily Ray was started.
But how come you started like your own company? How come you didn't like apply for a job, you know? You have to have a like driving force to start a company
in a different country as well. I guess, you know, as I look deeper, me and my wife talking about the other day, you know, the independence, I think, has just always just kind of been in the genes. You know, my dad owned companies. My grandfather was a brilliant man, graduated from Harvard. He was, the first black brain surgeon in America. Crazy. Wow. But then also he had his own ventures outside of just being that, you know. So I think it's definitely something that's been like embedded.
Mm.
I've always had the company. You know, I had a company in the U.S., so I was already in the independent stage. But when I got here, I started consulting for 10. Mm. So they brought me on. They didn't bring me on as an employee. They brought me on as a consultant, which was great. And then spent time around like Ola Håkansson and, you know, a lot of those projects they were developing, a lot of the producers and writers they were working with, and they had a nice little setup in L.A. too. So naturally, I got into that for like maybe like the first, I want to say I sat in that for about 2 years, but in the same process, I was still developing the company and developing the writers and producers I had.
Mm.
So it wasn't like immediately when I got to Sweden, things just started to click.
No.
It was a process. It took time to build the writers and producers. Like we talked off camera, it's a marathon, building writers and producers. But yeah, I had the blessing of being able to do something on the side, which was working with 10. And 10 is probably, in my eyes, the most brilliant company in music here when it comes to what they've done with Zara, what they're doing with Omar now, or what they did with Felix or Elephant or Icona. They just had a run of success, not only on the record side, also on the publishing side. And the staff was good. The team was good. Mac, Henke, Otis, all these people were brilliant. in the building when it came to being creative with the writers. So I got to see that side and spend a lot of time with Swedes at the time and just figure out how they function.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a total, for anybody who moves to another country, there's going to be some type of a culture clash, or there's going to be a change of temperature and environment for you. So to get a chance to work with such a great company coming to Sweden, I think was a blessing for sure.
Mm. Mm. What inspired you to like pursue a career in music publishing and management in the beginning? Like, do you come from like a music background yourself? You said you're a DJ, but how come, is it helping others? Like
I guess
reach their potential?
I guess naturally, you know, when you're young, my father was in music, but he was more on the more marketing side. Like, you know, we grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, which is like 3.5 hours from New York City. Both of my parents are from New York. They met in college in Boston, you know, and my dad, he worked in music. He did a lot of street team stuff. Street team things was big. That was like, at the time, you know, this is like, you know, pre internet, this is like vinyl and records and how to get the records from New York, and all the major labels were in New York. So it's like, how do you get this music out to these different markets that have big radio stations? How do we build these artists that all kind of like sit in New York at the time, for the most part? Like, the music business was in New York. So in this time, you know, like, a brilliant guy named Steve Rifkin, who started SRC, also started street team culture and built these small markets of teams in like Boston and, you know, Atlanta and Miami and Dallas and all these key places that were outside of the major system ecosystem, which sat in New York. And they would send, you know, promo stuff. They would send posters. They would send music, CDs. And, you know, we'd have meet and greets with radio stations, or we get the music to radio DJs or club DJs. And I kind of watched my dad kind of build that. Mm. And I think I was inspired from music from that day. And then he was a DJ, so we always had like turntables and stuff at the house. So I think naturally I built into that. Mm. Then I tried to produce. You know, I had all the stuff you needed before Splice. I had like the Triton and the Roland Phantom and the MPC, and I loved it. You know, I tried my best at it, but I realized I think I'm better at almost this, speaking and selling. And, you know, at that point, just got into management.
Mm. Like, so selling another person's art, sort of, comes natural to you.
Yeah, I think just being the speaker, I guess, just being the loudspeaker saying, hey, this person over here has something great, and I want the world to see it. I want to be a part of that journey. I think that's just something that just naturally just came. I don't know if maybe the beats I made and somebody said was whack. I don't know what got me to the point of just saying, hey, don't be a producer. My dad still to this day is like, oh, you should just focus on being a creative. I'm just like, hey, you know, publishing is really not that bad. You need hit records. We're working on that. But you know what? Publishing is really not that bad. He still beats me up a little bit to this day about not being as creative. Even though I tell him, hey, it's a creative role. Mm. I feel creative. I feel as creative as I want to be. But, yeah, the producing, I don't know if I could ever carve out or find some of those beats that might be on Lil Dad or, you know, one of these, you know, MPC used to have to record all the beats onto like a flash drive. If I could find a flash and or a CD, I burned a CD of some beats that I made. I'd love to find it and just see if anybody would think it's great. Mm. I doubt anybody think it's great, for sure. I tried my best in that and moved on to something else.
So how much do you have to love the music you work with?
I think that's really important. You know, I think, like I said, I think the DJing helped to kind of open up a lot of genres. You know, like growing up in Boston, Boston's like a real top 40 city. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's like, if I was DJing a club anywhere, you couldn't just play one genre. You had to kind of jump around and play, I don't know, even we have classics like Sweet Caroline that just rings off at the end of every like sports game, whatever. It's just, you find a way to kind of mesh genres. So I think that maybe helped liking music overall and wanting to dig deep into, you know, something that might not be what was maybe played in the house as much. I know, of course, like classics, soul classics and Marvin Gaye, and, mm-hmm. Bobby Womack, and a lot of this stuff was being played in the house. But, you know, when you start DJing, you're DJing top 40 clubs and nightclubs, you got to find a way to really dig into the crates and find something special that's going to move the crowd. So, yeah, I would say that kind of helped loving all genres, because I feel like naturally being here and being in Europe, you're kind of exposed to a lot of different cultures and genres. Mm. You know what I mean? It's not just, you know, right now K-pop has been around for a bit in Sweden, but now to the world it's starting to be more trendy for writers and producers to do K-pop. So that's one sonic sound, right? That's different from, obviously I didn't grow up listening to K-pop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but I find a love in it. I like the melodies. I like the songs. Dance is the same, like, you know, just like a more European dance, like what's coming out of Germany or what's coming out of France. Obviously, that wasn't something I grew up with either. So, you know, being in Europe, you know, I spent a lot of time in London, try to spend some time in Germany. We're working, you know, which we have our writers and producers working in a lot of different territories. So naturally, you know, you find the love of finding great artists in different territories outside of just America. Mm. I feel like before I lived in Europe, I just thought America was everything, which most people do.
Yeah.
Like most Americans feel like America is everything. I couldn't tell you what Sweden was on the map until I moved here.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, I did. My parents still think I live in Switzerland.
Nah.
You know what I mean? That's the hardest toss-up. I had to double-check their they're coming actually next week to visit. I had to double-check their plane tickets to make sure make sure they're not going to Zurich. I think naturally you want to love the music. I try to listen to a lot. I try to listen to most of the demos that our writers and producers are sending over, and, you know, it's coming from a lot of different territories. So, you know, just learning how to adapt to that. Yeah.
So let's talk about, like, the partnership with Warner Chappell.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big thing to land.
Yeah.
How did it start, and what advantages do you think that has brought to Lil Ray Music?
I think it's been great. I think it's opened up a great network.
Yeah.
I've been able to be around a lot of brilliant record executives, not only domestic, but internationally as well. You know, Ryan Press is the president of North America in the U.S. He was a key figure in me actually getting my publishing company.
Mm.
I think he brought the light to say, hey, like, there's a guy I know who's great. He's doing great things over there. We probably should look at him for publishing before somebody else does. And I think that kind of sparked the fire. So it kind of came, I want to say it kind of came from the U.S. back to Sweden, even though, like, Arvid Frist was the head of A&R at the time. He's at a different company now, but, you know, great guy. I owe a lot to him, too. So he knew of me already. So I think naturally it was an easy progression for Ryan to get me in the building as a publishing partner.
Yeah.
Because we have a publishing partner with Chappell, but I know recently, as of like a year ago, they did a press release that I was coming in to consult as well as build the venture.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is owed to not just me. That's owed to all the creatives that I work with, right? Because I'm just a extension of their success. You know what I mean? Like, they're making the music. I'm helping move it around. I'm helping facilitate it. And then also, just to add in the strategic partnerships, you know, Tommy Brown was a really good friend of mine. He's still a great friend. Talk to him every day. Taylor Parks, great friend. Talk to her every day. We did strategic partnerships in the beginning. I could break them down. Obviously, with Tommy has a company called Champagne Therapy. Tommy Brown, if anybody doesn't know, has been a real backbone to a lot of Ariana Grande's success. He produced all the positions. He did Seven Rings. He did Thank You Next. And we could talk for about an hour and a half about all the songs that he's had success of or been behind. And the same with Taylor Parks. You know, Taylor's wrote Thank You Next and Seven Rings, and she was a big bulk of positions and a lot of Ariana's success and a lot of others. Panic at the Disco. She did High Hopes, which went great. And then she did Khalid and Imani, Love Lies, that did great. So she's had a lot of success.
Mm.
And both of them kind of bleed in my vision of trying to bridge a gap. You know, I found some great writers and producers, asked them to, if they'd be open to doing some partnerships, whether it was publishing or management, and both of them agreed that it was a great idea, and we had some success out of it. So by motioning those things, I think is what helped me for sure gain my positioning in Chapel.
Mm.
I think without them being, you know, in my life or any of the creatives, I for sure wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. So I'm forever grateful for that,
mm.
you know.
So how does it work, like having a partnership? Are you a sub-label, sub-publisher?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have a joint venture
yeah.
and an admin. So for anybody who doesn't know, a joint venture is a 50-50 partnership. So they help facilitate, you know, the funding for our creatives, and help broker those deals with us. And then also we have admin rights where if there's things that we like that maybe they disagree with, but we still want to go, we just kind of handle that on our own. And then they mm-hmm. help, you know, administer the publishing and collect the royalties and those things. And they got a great team. The team over there, when it comes to, you know, Lars being at the head, being the MD, he's great. He's had a ton of success. He's had success with like the Wolf Cousins, and that sits in the building. And that's really amazing to see what Max and those guys have done over the years before I even knew where Sweden was.
Mm.
They were dominant globally. I would say Max is the reason why any one of us could actually probably bring a Swedish talent outside of here, because he set such a tone that when Swedes walk in a room, there is a definitely a respect level, you know? So, having them in the building, and then, you know, they have a A&R named Leslie Tay, who's doing great.
Been on the podcast as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. he's a podcast alumni.
Maybe a year ago or something yeah. like that. Yeah.
Nah, he's killing. He's signing some of the best talent in the market, and, you know, he's doing some great things internationally. We just had a cut with a French artist that, you know, he helped facilitate with Bello, who's upstairs doing great things too. Bello's
also been on the podcast.
Oh, amazing. Bello. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A few years ago.
He is dominating at being an international role at Warner, and, you know, I see him on planes as much as I try to be on planes, and I just salute him because he is working. Mm. That guy is working so hard, you know, and he's doing great things. I think all of that stuff is really inspiring. And then, yeah, Warner the same way. Mm. Just shouting out some names for anybody who might want to Google them later. But, like, Ryan Press, I said before, Shanee Gonzalez is in the UK. She's a phenomenal executive, female from America, moved to the UK. Super talented, super brilliant, definitely a pivotal part in what I'm trying to do here. She's super supportive. Natasha's, you know, in the German office, super supportive. Joris in the French office. So there's a lot of support internationally for Lily Ray through Warner Chapel, and I'm grateful. It's been great. Like, I feel like they support my vision. They let me be me and let me, you know, come with crazy ideas like I do.
Mm.
I probably say the same with Leslie. Leslie kind of gets the same treatment. They just let us kind of do our thing. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, heads of publishing companies might say, ah, that's a great idea, but let's hold off. And I feel like they've given me a lot of freedom to build out, you know, the company the way I would like to. And it's been great. I can't ask for anything else.
So how much do you work with, or have you worked with, like, business plans, you know, keynotes? I feel like the music industry is so much
data,
but yeah. It's also so much storytelling,
mm-hmm.
To build up like a case or mm-hmm. build up an artist or a vision or a brand. Do you have like a business plan that you present to others, or a keynote that this is Lil Ray, or this is the music, this is the artist?
Okay, yeah. I think in the publishing and manager world, you kind of have maybe like a deck or like a blurb on each writer. Yeah, we have that. I try to use it where I can. I think our scenario, which I don't know if it's unique or different, but our approach really has been a lot more relationship based.
Yeah,
I'm a real advocate of actually taking the time to build a relationship. You know, I think you don't want to rush into anything. I think, you know, if there's a if there's a creative that you want to work with, or if there's an artist you want to work with, try to be more strategic. Maybe DMing the artist and saying, hey, like, I have songs for you. Maybe that artist might be saying, hey, I already have a team and I have a lot of songs, so maybe it might be more strategic to build with, you know, the producers around the artist, or the A&R, or the manager, or whoever you feel like is close enough that it take a listen to your music for you to get there. So I'm more of an advocate of relationships. I feel like we kind of fight in a more of a relationship box, like Taylor Parks having her own relationships, with Tommy Brown having relationships, and my own relationships, and then just trying to, you know, plug and play our creatives in those pockets.
Yeah.
Because our CVs are a little scattered, and I still, like, even though I feel like we've had some success and we've been able to work with some great talents, we've worked with Ariana and we've worked with Dua Lipa, Little Mix and Machine Gun Kelly, and I know I'm missing Summer Walker. We were nominated for 3 Grammys this year, with 2 with Janelle Monáe and 1 with Summer Walker. So I feel like we've had a nice run of songs. I wouldn't say we've had massive hit songs, like, you know, like I think I'm still waiting for those moments. It takes, like I said, it's a marathon. It takes time. It's going to be a while. I'm not expecting to have a hit tomorrow. So I don't know if our CVs or our blurbs just naturally get us in the room. I think I have to be strategic until, you know, you could say, this is, you know, this is Max Martin. You don't have to sell Max, right? It's just, he has hits for days. Or this is Benny Blanco. Or, like, you don't really have to sell him. Or Ryan Tedder. Mm. These people don't really need blurbs. You know what I mean? Nah. So there's 2 ways to do it. There's some people who are super heavy with making sure that their data is right, and they're selling their creative through, like, a spreadsheet and what they've done. And I feel like so far when we have tried to maybe do that, we haven't really landed where we'd want to land. So I try to kind of stay in a box of relationships that I feel like we're close enough to really get the result that we're looking for.
Regarding those relationships, like in the box, like you described, almost, do you have a strategic way or like a plan on how you work with those relationships? Like, how often do you call them, email, you know, hang out with them to like nurture the relationship?
It comes, because I don't want it to sound calculated. It just comes natural. You know what I mean? It's like just some things where it's like, if you vibe with a person, or even if you spent some time with a person, it's like, and it's their birthday. It's like, of course, like if you're cool with the person like that and y'all hang out and this is friends, maybe you might want to post them on your Instagram story. Hey, happy birthday. And shout out to anybody who's following you that, like, this is my friend, you know. But then also there's just people who, like, hey, they post as their birthday and it takes 2 seconds to comment, like, happy birthday. You know what I mean? It's just something like, so it's naturally.
So it's a lot of, like, on social media, or
it's a little everything. Like, I'm on the phone a lot. My wife probably hate to hear that. I'm on the phone a lot. I'm texting all the time. But it just comes natural. Like, it's just a relationship thing. I think it's one of the key things of the business is to be likable. You know, like, I don't know if everybody's gonna like you, but if your pie chart of likability is higher than not being liked, you're probably a likable person. And I think that's most important. It's just, you know, you don't have to be too pushy out the gate. Take the shot, too. You know, like, if there's somebody that you really like, you know, tell them, hey, like, I'm a fan of what you do. I would love to work with you. You know, I would say don't be scared to seize the moment. There is some type of fine line between being pushy and, you know, just saluting somebody's greatness and saying, hey, I think you're great. and I just want to tell you that. So I think, the relationship thing and those were kind of built for a while. I can't lie and tell you that every American relationship I have was built in the time I was in Sweden. No, I've spent years in New York, spent years in L.A. You know, my first artist had a successful record that went top 10 at radio, and we traveled in all the markets. We went old school and hopped in a van and hit every single radio station. I've been to almost I would have to say I've been to almost every single radio station in the U.S. Even the small towns, Arkansas, places that Swedes will probably never go, Nebraska, Idaho. I've been all those places. So, you know, naturally relationships are going to be built, and that all took time. That took years. There's parts of my career I look back and say, damn, it would have been a lot easier just to DM somebody.
Yeah.
I wish they had DM, man. Oh, my God. I wish they had DM when I started. Oh, man. I wish they had DM and you actually knew who's who. Like, you know, it was like going to an event and it's like, you know, the people who want to be known. But then there's people who don't want to be known and you're just kind of like, I know this is somebody because the whole energy keeps gravitating this person, but I have no idea who that is.
Mm.
Instagram cleans all that up, right?
You're
going to see, okay, this person follows this person. This person's going to post a picture, tag this person. You're like, perfect, there he goes. He's tagged in that photo.
Yeah.
So obviously that landscape of technology changed a lot. So I guess it comes from a lot of different places. I wouldn't say I'm a DM warrior. Definitely not that. I'm not flying thousands of DMs. I'm not a DM warrior. I'm active on social media and you know, disclaimer, if I go back into the time of how many pictures or what I posted, because I think Instagram was just really starting to roll when my first artist, his name was Sebastian Michael, when Sebastian was really heating up, I think Instagram was just starting to like become a thing. And I wasn't like crazy post heavy at that time. So, you know, a disclaimer, I'm super post heavy to offset that my writers and producers don't post as much, because it's like somebody has to be a loudspeaker. And I guess I'll take the obnoxious one of on a Friday posting all of our releases, or, you know, posting, you know, that we've been in with this person, we're having this song come out. I'm gonna be that one and put the flag up and say that's my role. You know, if my creatives are not gonna do it, somebody got to do it. There's, you know, right now we're competing. There's millions of people trying to get music, you know, across the line to artists, you know, and there's not enough artists, or, you know, there are artists. I'm not going to say there's not enough artists. There's probably an artist for every producer and writer, but most producers and writers probably want to work in that one percentile of superstars. You know what I mean? I think that's the hard part, because you're trying to chase something that is kind of out of your class. I have this like class thing, right? It's like, you know, if you're a freshman, we have in America, it's like freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year. You know, so most of the time when you're a freshman, you're probably like 13 and a half, 14, you know. So most of the time, you know, seniors ain't really hanging out with freshmen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you might get a quick moment maybe in a cafeteria where a senior might like your Jordans and say, yo, that's dope. And I guess that equivalates to maybe, you know, you getting in with a big artist one time and maybe having a shot to maybe, you know, have success with that artist, because maybe you were lucky enough to get in that room because maybe two other bigger writers and producers, i.e. seniors, were in the room too.
Yeah.
But it's not natural for freshmen to really hang out with seniors. So it's like, you got to kind of find your class. Like, find that artist. You know, music marketing is a massive school. Great talent comes out of there. And there's a lot of great music schools in Sweden. Find that kid in your class that you think is dope, and won't you build a project with that kid and become like, you know, one of those stories, like, you know, Billie Eilish and Phineas, or be one of those stories, or Louis Bell and Post Malone. You know, it's just like you believe in something, you see it through, it becomes a superstar. Ice Spice and Riot, great example. You know what I mean? Riot doesn't have to do anything. He has Ice Spice.
Mm.
It's all coming to him. He doesn't have to DM anybody or chase somebody down. He believed in a girl that he went to school with. You know, they both from the Bronx. It took off, and then Ice Spice becomes Ice Spice, and Riot becomes Riot. You know, so I say naturally, you know, work in your class first, and don't feel like, you know, you're above hanging out with your class and building in your class. Like, you know, the seniors are going to be seniors, but you will be a senior one day, but it's better to build. So I would say I use that example with executives too. I think I've seen Tommy around. I've seen Tommy for a long time. I seen Taylor Parks for a long time. these are all in my class. You know, they're all in my quote unquote freshman class, and then we all become seniors. So everybody in that senior class is having moments, and I'm blessed to be able to have a moment with them.
I noticed that when we communicated, and you're pretty effective when communicating, like using short words or short sentences, like through email, for example. Like Swedes are very like, how, I hope you're good. Oh, your weekend was good. Bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kids are fine. Blah, da, da, da. I was wondering, da, 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 da. Best, da, da, da.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel like when you communicate with someone like that? I know that I might write too much in an email sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
When I just need to get to the point.
Yeah, yeah.
Or get to the question. How do you think about like email or DM communication like that?
I say the maybe get to the point faster.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, you got ChatGPT now and people using ChatGPT, and every time I use it, I just like shorter. Make it shorter.
Yeah,
make it shorter.
Yeah.
And I see how short we can get it if I'm trying to cheat to like send an email to sound way more professional than I am. I feel like you want to get to the point, man. Like, you know, if I see a big email and I'm having a long day of just a lot of things being thrown at me, it's hard to kind of get through that thing. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, we're having interns for the first time. We have two. We have Alexis and Neosha's from DMG. So, you know, not everybody's maybe blessed to have an intern to be able to forward that thing and say, can you break this one down to me? Because this thing is way too long. Time is flying. You know, I had to really take that in consideration. Anybody who's working internationally, you know, and trying to pitch songs or play songs, you know, in different countries. Okay, one is a time gap, right? So while you're fresh and alive at, I don't know, 6 o'clock, you know, 6 o'clock in the day, you know, what is that, early evening? You know, if you're talking to somebody in LA, it's 9 a.m. So you got to first take that in consideration, right? It's 9 a.m, you know, and you're hitting somebody at 6 p.m. And it's the same vice versa when I wake up to a bunch of text messages coming from, you know, LA or New York or Atlanta or one of these places in the States. You know, I'm going through 15 text messages coming from overnight because of the time difference. So naturally, you don't know where somebody's at or what they're doing. You know what I mean? So I think it's better to kind of maybe keep it short and get to the point because, yeah, those times are tricky. And also, what I think it took me a while to get is like, if I message somebody and they don't respond quick, right? I feel like here, I don't know if it's, you know, it's a whole nother topic of, you know, socialism or safety nets, a whole nother conversation. But I do feel like I have a lot more time. You know, I'm not living in LA. I'm not stuck in traffic. You can't hold your phone and talk while you're, you know, in LA traffic to get a ticket. So when somebody doesn't text me coming from America, you know, at first it used to bother me like, yo, man, they ain't hit me back. It's been like 3-4 hours. But then I got to remember, A, who am I texting? How important is their life? How important is their role? Is it Ryan Press or Shani, where I could show you 15 blue bubbles before I get a gray bubble of an answer and I keep going. And I'm just so used to it at this point because I know both of those people are flooded every day with people talking to them. And I don't take it as my relationship ain't great because when I see them, the love is always amazing. And when I, you know, and wherever I'm at, they tell me to pull up and the relationship is definitely there and it's solid and it's 100%. But you do have to understand and respect that people are living lives and they might not get to your thing. You know what I mean? And don't be scared to hit them again. Like if you want to really get to them, hit them again. You know what I mean? But also do understand, you know, there is a thing about a shot never coming back around. That's a real fact. I know sometimes here, I think people feel like, oh, it's okay. I missed that one. I'll get the next one. It's a culture of that. But I feel like in the music business, you got to kind of take it as like, when you do take that shot to go talk to that person that you really want to talk to, make sure your thing is together. Make sure your presentation is together, and make sure you say something impeccable in that text or email or a DM that's going to make somebody say, okay, what is this? I need to check this out. I need to know who this person is. I think it's really important to do that, you know?
As a music publisher, what do you think are the key factors you consider when seeking placement for music in like various media outlets?
Yeah, when it's film or like television or sync, like, you know, Warner has a great sync department globally, and they push for syncs. I wouldn't say sync is like my background. You know, my partner in the company, Justin Martinez, he's American as well. You know, I don't know if you could do both of us in the same company, but he's definitely a character you should definitely catch at one point. But Justin grew up in Los Angeles. He works with me. I started the company. He came in maybe a year or two late. I met him here. And let's just say having that American energy every day, like we just catch each other's like lingo or a classic line from a movie or whatever the case may be. We just catch it. We laugh. And I'm just like, oh, thank God that this guy understands me. So to be running this journey with him has been great, and he's building as an exec. But he came here, same thing as me, found love, and I met him here. I didn't really know him I didn't know him in America, but I met him here, and you know, he had a sync background, so he has a more understanding in sync. He doesn't move on it as much because we're so buried in just working on placing songs on artists. Like I would say, that's our key business. The sync thing is something that we definitely lean on our partners for at Chapel is the sync side. But, you know, sync is, you know, it's a brief thing. They get a brief and, you know, they say we need something that sounds like this, or we're looking for this for a commercial or TV show. And I guess naturally you're trying to embark that moment of, you know, if it's a love scene, you need some type of background music or song that's going to fit the scene, you know, and that's an art in itself, you know. Trying to find the song that's going to help move an artist's career and trying to find the song that's going to fit a scene is probably two different worlds that meet somewhere in the middle, I would say.
So you're more like working with the producer and placing music together with the artist or other artists?
Yeah, so I would say we're more in the placing of artist business and dealing with A&Rs that are more on the record side and not as much A&Rs on the sync side. Sync has become like a powerful part of the business. Like it's something that's definitely overlooked, but it's keeping the lights on a lot of publishing companies is sync. Like Warner is a global company, probably syncs, I don't know, thousands of songs a day. I couldn't even imagine. It's just, they have so much catalog. They probably sync stuff. There's not a day that goes by that they don't have a sync. I remember, just a sidebar, you know, the first Sebastian signed to Epic Records with Sylvia Rome, but we also had an indie partner. It was a guy named Ted Lucas at Slip and Slide, and Slip and Slide as a label in Miami was behind Trina, Trick Daddy, Rick Ross, Plies, even Pitbull, I think, was signed at one point. He's like a real staple in the Miami scene of music. And we did the deal, but I remember sitting with him one time and his phone was just buzzing. He said, it hasn't been a day that went by that I haven't cleared a sync. So he has a catalog of just that. I can't imagine what Warner has. You know, Warner's clearing all the time. So yeah, the sync side is different. Our focus more is dealing with A&Rs on the record side, dealing with managers, artist direct, you know, getting in where we could fit in. That thing is a strategy of maybe the songwriter's close to the artist, maybe the producer's close to the artist, maybe it's direct to the manager, maybe it's through an A&R or another publisher of another company. We do a lot of collaborating. I feel like that's really important. I feel like when I first got to Sweden, there was this like it was like this closed off like culture of like you build a team and then you close it off and then you work internally. And I think naturally we end up building a team, but I never really wanted to be closed off. I still don't think we're closed off to this day. I think we collaborate with almost every publishing company here for the most part. And I'm not biased to one because I do have a management company.
Yeah.
So Anton and Isabella are writers that signed to us and they're published by Tommy Brown. Tommy Brown's venture goes to UMPG in the US. And I manage them. So I talked to, you know, Jess and the team over there that's in the Nordics, and then also talked to Daniela or Coletta or any of these other ones in different territories about them pertaining their career, and they're with UMPG. So naturally, having a manager company and a publishing, I'm pretty open to talking to a lot of publishers anyway. But then we cross collaborate with all the major publishers and indies, and we work with the very good. They're doing amazing, brilliant things, and we've done stuff. We've had slight moments. Wouldn't say I'm the one putting it together, but Taylor Parks is one of the best writers in the business. I'm biased. I'd say she's the best in the world because we're in business. I love her to death. We've had some stuff with MXM on the back of Taylor, I would say. I wouldn't say it's on the back of our talents. Not yet. Hopefully. I'll put that in the air. They're the best to ever do it. And then outside of that, we've done stuff with 10, and we've done stuff with Universal. We've done stuff with Sony. So I think collaboration and the market is so healthy, and it's going to help keep the Swedish thing going, man. Like, this thing has been going since the 90s. Sweden's been on fire since the 90s of catching songs, and creatives catch songs. It's something, I don't know if it's something in the water, because I drink it every day. It's something. But yeah, this place is really special. They've now done, you know, they had the Netflix TV show about how special Sweden is. And this thing is really special when it comes to pop music and other genres. You know, they Swedes find a way to get on those records. So whoever's listening, that person will definitely find a way to get on a big record, for sure. If they're Swedish, they're going to find a way, for sure.
Definitely.
I feel, yeah.
So how do you balance these two, like publishing and management for yourself? Do they collide sometimes when you see like a potential in an artist, or and you have a great producer and you see a match, but the match isn't really there because of like chemistry between them, or, you know, do your time or your effort or your like work collide sometimes? You know what I mean?
Do you mean like
with
like a management client or a publishing client?
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, I think we treat both the same.
Yeah,
like we really do. I try my best to treat both the same. Like, of course, management, you don't own anything. Publishing, you have ownership in the catalog. So naturally, a businessman to say publishing is more important because you own it. But I think for me and the ones that I manage at the moment, we haven't picked up much on management. It's been the people who I've kind of started with, who are in like great partnerships with a Taylor or a Tommy. I don't know if we manage anybody outside of somebody who's not connected to somebody else we work with. Real tight-knit mafioso kind of vibe. It's a mafioso kind of vibe. But the management, I treat the same. If I'm saying I want to be in your career, then now you have access to me, and I'm dedicated to you, like, to best of my ability. I have a wife and two kids, and she'll say I don't have a separation, which I don't really think I do, because I do answer. She was making a joke that I was having a music conversation, you know, with the doctor the day Lily was born.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I'm trying my best to shut it off and on. It's something I love. I just love talking about it, being around it. So sometimes there's moments where you probably shouldn't talk about it, or you probably shouldn't be tuned in. I'm trying to turn off, but you know, if I'm dedicating my time and my life and my efforts to a creative or a writer who's with us, yeah, I'm trying my best every day. I'm waking up excited about every writer or producer who's believing in me to help, you know, steer the ship of their career and be in that marathon with them. I'm lacing my sneakers and I'm trying to run as fast as I can every day for every single one of them. I love all of them. I love every creative. Every creative that believes in me, I love them all. I love every single one of them. And they're all doing great in their own pace and their own time. They all have their space and their moments. And then they have to, you know, they have to carry their careers, which is like if they had a... You know, Oliver Freed is probably dealing with that now. Oliver worked on Dua Lipa and Ariana, and that thing happened fast. But also now he has to carry that. So now he has to pace himself and understand not every day you're going to do Ariana and Dua Lipa. You're going to work with this artist, so you're going to still work with new artists, and you're going to build your career and your catalog. And, you know, it's the same with any one of the writers, Alvin, Gustav, Simon. I can name Joel Malko, who just called into the to the podcast.
Yeah.
On the computer, since we're borrowing Alvin's computer because of technical difficulties.
But how do you talk with those creatives to pace themselves when they want to be there again, when they be when they want to have a placement in together with Ariana, or how do you motivate them to keep going?
I guess it's that class conversation, right? It's just that it goes back to that class conversation and say, yo, before you probably picked up your laptop or made your first beat, Ariana Grande was Ariana Grande. You know what I'm saying? So it makes sense. Obviously, Tommy Brown was their first album. You know, Max was their first album. Sovin, these people, like, they have the relationship with Ariana and them is undeniable, period. We can't even get in that. We weren't in the class. We're not. They were seniors. My writers, I wouldn't even call them freshmen at the time. I would say my writers were far schooling.
Yeah.
Far schooling. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you're lucky enough to go from far schooling to Ariana, man, hey, that happens. That doesn't happen often. You got to thank the blessing. Thank the writers or producers who allowed you to be involved in that because they saw something brilliant in you. But that doesn't happen every day. That's just life. So you gotta understand you had that moment. You fight to get back. You tasted it. So now you must have the hunger to win. It's like Michael Jordan's first championship. He tasted it. Now it's like, yo, they didn't win all the ones back to back. They lost a couple years. But you know what? You gotta get after it and run your course and stay in the marathon. This thing is for sure a marathon, and you're gonna have other cuts. And maybe, you know, since you hit the target, you know, you hit the bullseye. Every person wants to hit the bullseye, or what's on their bucket list of what they think is not obtainable. You might have hit that, but now you gotta keep shooting darts and hit other points, because it's all about adding up the points. It's not about 50 points you get for hitting the red bullseye once or twice. It's about the 10s and the 30s and the 10. You just got to keep firing darts. You know what I mean? Because the game is whoever has the most at the end. It's not about how many times they hit the bullseye. So, you know, treat every artist and walk in the room like every artist is Ariana Grande. It's really tough to do. Like, some people really have a hard time doing it. I would have to say Max has probably mastered that, right? Because it's like, it's not just... He's not only working with The Weeknd and Ariana. He's actually still working with acts that are probably new acts and still walking in the room like, I'm going to give this person the hit that I would give Ariana. I don't think he'd be successful for 30 years if he treated the game that way. So I think naturally you just have to take every day as it comes, and hopefully you'll be able to build the next Ariana. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Regarding like a potential artist signed to your management, how do you assess that artist when considering taking on them as a client?
I think I'm a people person. You know what I mean? Like, I think I gravitate to the personality way more than I think the talent. I think talent can be developed and crafted. I think the personality to me is everything. I think, you know, are you likable? Like, you know, can I, do I like you? You know what I mean? Like, can we have a conversation? You know what I mean? You don't have to be somebody that I would hang out with every day, but naturally I'm being your career. So I want to be able to know that I can have real conversations with you and we can vibe, and you'll laugh at any one of my dad jokes because you might feel like you have to because we're in business. You know what I mean? Any one of those things. Any one of those things, I'm hoping, you know, is the process.
When it comes to talent and like the craft and the potential of like being a this big artist going from kindergarten to like senior, you know? How do you have like a clear vision on how that path for that specific artist will be, sort of?
I think, you know, there's a lot. Anybody tell you this thing is built on a lot of luck.
Mm.
But I guess the more you're at it, the more you're fighting for it every day. I think you have a better chance of hitting luck is kind of how it's probably said.
Mm.
But a lot of things have to line up. So many things have to line up to have a successful hit song with an artist, you know, and writers have to just be in position for that. You know what I mean? And you know, disclaimer, obviously they need to be talented, but this place is already built on so much talent. Like the bar, you know, there was a artist here from the UK the other day, and they said, you know, the bar in Sweden is really high for talent. And it is, like, for sure. It's really competitive. You got, I know I keep going back to Max because everybody probably talks about Max in these interviews, but he's been great for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you're having these LeBron and Jordan conversations, and it's like, they're like, oh, you know, yeah, but Jordan played in a different time and LeBron played in a different time. It's like, if you put that in music, that means this guy was the best in like three different decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? That's unheard of. That's like, if this guy's getting up and putting his shoes on every day and he's building a team that's all following his lead to be great, right? Because you're as good as the leader. You know, this guy, it's like you're battling against a LeBron times 100. So whatever, how good LeBron is, whoever the player is that's 100 times better than LeBron, that's probably Max Martin music, you know? So if that person is leading the ship in a country, that's going to set the bar for the whole country to be talented. So I think when I'm so spoiled to a certain extent living here with the talent level, and, you know, I writers and producers that come here, they're all talented. I don't even, if there's an A&R that knows how to, you know, see the levels of talent in Sweden, I need to meet that one and take a course, because I struggle sometimes, because I think they're all great. Like, the talent that's in Sweden is unmatched, period, to anywhere else. And I'm probably losing my U.S. flag for that. So, one of my American friends is going to say, oh, bro, you just killed us. You killed us in that interview. What was that? You gotta say we're the best. But I don't know, man. 10 million person country, this much success, it's unmatched for sure. It doesn't make sense. But the bar is high. The bar is high with talent. And any one of us as A&Rs, I think we should be waking up every day and running to the hills with this talent, because it's really not normal. It's not normal. And for me to have a level of success that I've had in the 6 years of being here or so, seven now, because Lily's seven, I match it with Lily's age, 7 years, I feel like it's all off the back of the talent. Like, the talent level is if I can get them in the right space for their talents to shine, I feel really confident that we're going to execute.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, like, the music industry is changing a lot, and it's quickly changing. Do you have any strategies or plans or ways to keep up with the changes, like the trends in your work?
You know, there's this thing about, I'm trying to be ahead. Like, I just want to be ahead of these territories, and I'm excited about these territories. Like, maybe just because I was born and raised in America, I think I'm not as super excited about America as maybe some others might be, where, like, America's the goal. I gotta get it going in America. And like, for me, like, I just think I love the UK. I'm in the UK, like, every other week, spending time with a lot of creatives and meeting a lot of A&Rs and executives there, you know, just trying to be ahead. I think Swedes were ahead for K-pop. And I remember when I first got here, people were like, oh my God, it's a graveyard. You shouldn't do K-pop. If you do K-pop, you're not going to make it. And I'm just like, I think anywhere that you can have success is success. Thomas Garrison signed to Chapel. I think he's brilliant. It's like, you know, to have 70 records and mellow, you can't tell me this guy isn't great at something. This guy's successful. If it's not claimed as cool in your book, I'm the first one to tell bro all the time. He's cool. Like, he to have 70 and have a bunch of wins, it's like, come on, bro. Like, you can't hate on that. That's at that point, you're just hating if you think, oh, yeah, but it's mellow. It's not. Yeah, bro, it's success somewhere. So for all those people who jumped in K-pop early when it wasn't trendy, salute to them. And, you know, they're all probably recouped in their deals and they're all making money. Mm. And they all have a head start to what's trendy. So I try to think forward. I'm looking at India as a market, right? Mm. I'm hopefully going in April to go start, you know, shaking some leaves and seeing what's going on that side. Mm. Everybody's saying it's the next emerging market, but as you see, emerging market becomes trendy so fast. You know, like, Nigeria was emerging market 4 or 5 years ago. Now you got Rema, Wizkid, and Iris Star, and, you know, Burna Boy, and all these talents coming out, and they got talents. They have hundreds coming. Like, I was in Nigeria last year for a camp that Chapel did with Maven. Shani Gonzalez put it together, and our writers were blessed to be invited to go. So a couple of them went to Nigeria, and man, they're coming. Like, they're coming fast. Mm. Like, they're, you know, pause. They're going. They're coming. So, they're in line if they're not already in takeover mode, just like Latin was with Bad Bunny and these things. Yeah. So, I'm trying to be ahead of territories. I try to tell my writers we should just be ahead. Mm. Try to be, you know, in the fold of all territories. Let's do stuff in Germany. Let's do stuff in France. Let's do stuff in the UK. Let's, you know, let's get on India before everybody else does, man. We're already doing stuff in Korea, and we've had success in the UK, and we have some stuff coming in France, and we've had some stuff coming in Germany. And of course, America is the glitter. You know, that's I guess deemed as the cool stuff. But overall, for me, I think every market can change your life. I think success is coming up with that idea in the studio and seeing that thing come to life for somebody. Like, it doesn't matter if it's Loreen with Tattoo or POV or Ariana Grande or whoever else, you know, Robin Schulz in Germany or, you know, Stromae in France or Central C or Dua Lipa in the UK. It doesn't matter. Mm. I think having success somewhere is the most important.
Yeah. So, what do you think about the future for Lil Ray Music from now on then? Mm-hmm. You talked about emerging markets and but what steps are you taking to grow Lil Music into the future?
I just want to keep seeing my writers and producers live out their dreams of being able to do this full time, you know, and be able to live off this and obviously raise families off of this. You know, the ages range anywhere from, you know, looking at a 17-year-old kid who's making music out of Austria that, you know, I'm looking at doing some business with, and all the way up to 33, 34. So some people that are signed with me is now in that process of having their success, finding a way to pace themselves and probably, you know, raise a family or probably start a family. I think I'm going to 3 weddings this year of just creatives that I'm that I'm involved in. So, you know, they're getting married, you know what I mean? So they get into that place in their life. So I think it's nurturing young talent, finding a way for the talent that's coming up in age to be able to still work at a good work rate plus have a family life, you know, which I think is really important. And continue to just be a student. I'm just trying to stay a student as long as I can. Like, as you get older, you just naturally become a teacher. So it's like, you know, I hit an age at some point where I'm just like, now, like, I find myself wanting to teach everybody, and I'm like, bro, I still feel really young. I shouldn't be teaching. I need to keep finding ways to be a student. So it's good to have, you know, Shanice, Ryan's, Lars, like these people who have been in the game for so many years to be able to ask questions, and I'm always asking questions, and I'm trying to learn, you know, just learn. I want to learn global business. You know, I'm so excited about global business. You know, a lot of my friends, man, they're talking about what's going on. You know, my friends in music talking about what's going on in Atlanta or Miami or, or Los Angeles, you know. And then my friends from home I grew up with, some of them only been on a plane twice. Mm. You know, you'd be surprised. You know how many people in America don't have passports? That's insane. I've been begging my older brother to get a passport for like 3 years. That's a whole nother conversation. This guy just can't get this guy a passport. But it's just most people just stay in America. So I think global business is what I'm excited about. I'm excited to keep building the team that we have now and hopefully maybe add some new ones as it comes and fits. Building staff, try to build the future, right? This is what the podcast for, right? To drop gems for that next striving executive, right? I guess that's the teaching. But on the flip side, you know, I got Neosha, you know, who's from DMG. Neosha's interning for us, and you know, she's putting me up on game all the time. I think the way you stay young in this thing is to have youth around you. So having young people around you, you just stay up on game on a lot of things, whether it's artists or trends or what's cool, what's not cool, or you know. So I'm trying to stay a student from some way possible.
That's great.
As long as I can.
That's great. And that will wrap up for today.
Sweet.
Thank you so much for a great conversation and best of luck.
Thank you. I love this podcast. I love what you're doing. My wife has sit there for about an hour and a half and kind of explain to me what's being said in Swedish.
Yeah.
You should go to subtitles, man. Gotta go to English subtitles.
We will.
You know what I mean? Let's get an English subtitle going, because I could at least read it. You know what I mean? It's been great. Thank you, Andreas.
It's been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ja, det var allt för idag. Så stort, stort tack för att du har lyssnat. Vi uppskattar verkligen att du stöttar podden genom att lyssna. Och vill du stötta ännu mer, se till att klicka på följknappen så att du får uppdateringar så snart vi har ett nytt avsnitt ute. Har du tips om personer som du tycker ska vara med i podden, ämnen som vi ska ta upp, frågeställningar som vi bör bena ut, hör jättegärna av dig till oss då på info@dmgeducation.se. Återigen, stort tack för att du har lyssnat. Vi ses nästa avsnitt.